This week, we have news about bringing an ancient play of initiation back to life. Then we'll get into the education, which involves getting in a time machine and heading back to the first time Midnight Freemason contributor Darren A. Lehners goes to the East. And we'll follow that up with two articles relating to him finishing out that first year in the East and then taking the East again. Then we will explore the tablets of Hiram Abiff, also known as the trestle board, the tracing board, the tarsal board, and even the floor carpet or floor cloth in an exploration of what Mackey's Encyclopedia has to say. We'll wrap it all up with a practical example of planning your year in the East from worshipful brother Adam Thayer. All this and more in this crash course in taking the East on this episode of Whence Came You. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back to the show. This is episode number 504. Thanks to our contributors, fellows, producers, and legacy partners for continuing to assist us in bringing Masonic education to all those interested in Freemasonry and its kindred sciences. What do you get for being a supporter of the show? Well, aside from the fact that you're bringing this awesome thing to so many people, everybody across the board gets this first tier kind of thank you, which is we created a Facebook group recently called Craftsman Plus. Now, it's different. Think of it as an online journal. It's a place to share real insights, feelings, and opinions with caring brothers about the things that we're talking about on the show. This is available to all the tiers of the people who assist us, and I've had to actually deny some people who request to become a member of that group. Now, this is not out of malice, it's not because I don't know you, it's just because this group is for the benefactors, these producers, contributors, fellows, and legacy partners of the show. As you know, in the episode, we ask questions about the articles, and then we take those questions and they're posted as writing prompts inside the Facebook group. Our members of the group discuss those questions. We have a lot of great insights, and we learn from each other there. And of course, the other benefits as they go in line. A contributor level gets your name on the website. The fellow gets those. Plus, I'll send you a card that I'll write to you. Absolutely a thank you card, like a real deal card, not something that's pre-printed. And a producer level will get those things all, plus the producer's pin. And the legacy partner is the kind of holy grail project. And in this one, it's our legacy gift. It's a top tier designed to allow the WCY podcast the ability to make large changes that would otherwise take years to fund. And the legacy partners get this really cool thing. And that is the ability to pick an episode topic, select the articles for inclusion, and give direction once a year. So you're going to direct an episode of the podcast once a year. And this is a really cool thing. So we're working with our legacy partners to put together their episodes this year, and I hope to bring those to you soon. So I just want to say thanks to all of you, and if you consider any of this, thank you again. I want to thank also the people out there who share our episodes, who like us on Facebook, who are subscribing on YouTube and turning on notifications or sharing these things with your friends, commenting, all of this. This all helps legitimize what we're doing, which you all know is Masonic education. It's not some fly-by-night thing that'll be gone tomorrow. This is legitimate Masonic education brought to you by you, so listener-supported education. And it is so important to anybody interested in not just Freemasonry, but the philosophy of ages. So thank you in advance. Other ways to support the show, of course, are on the shop, WCYpodcast.com. Click on the shop, check out some of the things we've got for sale there, including a number of books that I've either written or put together with other co-authors. You can pick up a producer's pin or any number of other projects, including the Craftsman Plus journal and pen, which I am finishing up R&D on right now. We've chosen a journal. We have a great pen to come with it, and we finalized the design for the book. Now, here's just a quick little hint on it. It's going to be pretty cool. Craftsman Plus is on the book, but it might be in Masonic code. And of course, it is done through our kind of subsidiary, Skull and Crown Limited. And the pens are hand-turned pens, and details on that also. The actual journals are leather bound, genuine leather, not like pleather or anything like that. They will not have anything on the cover because we'll keep it discreet. But we'll have the option, if you would like, to monogram it in either regular initials or we'll do it in Masonic code. So all that will be available soon. I want to thank you guys for your support in that arena. In the news, The Initiation of Plato, a kind of play story that was written or compiled by Manly P. Hall. We have our first icebreaker with the readers and performers of this. What is it going to be? Well, The Initiation of Plato, as I said in previous episodes, we are going to put on a live dramatized table read of The Initiation of Plato. The play itself is three tableaus or three tables consisting of various scenes. Each scene, there is dialogue and discourse between the people, and we're following Plato on his initiation through an ancient school of wisdom. And it'll be a lot of fun. It's not really a degree. And what's really cool about this is that the Philosophical Research Society, who owns the copyright to The Initiation of Plato, is actually in contact with us and very excited to not only allow us to do this, but praises us for bringing the work to life. So more on that as it comes forward. We're going to have our icebreaker, our rehearsal, and then we're going to pick a date and we'll put all that information out. It'll be through WCY Media, and then we'll go out through our various social media channels. So WCY, we'll throw it up on places like Refracted Light, The Winding Stairs, all your favorite groups, so that you can be informed about the event. We've been asked questions. Are we going to charge for this? Well, if we do, it will be minimal, and every dollar that we take in will benefit the Philosophical Research Society. So keep in mind that. Upcoming presentations. On August 1st, I'm going to be doing the Business of Freemasonry, kind of a little webinar talk for the Craftsman Online on the Business of Freemasonry. So if you're familiar with the Craftsman Online, I was just on their podcast not too long ago. So we're really excited about that. You can check that out. I'll have a link back to that also in the show notes if you wanted to check out that episode. You can hear all about how I used to ride my bike to the lodge and only be in lodge for like 12 minutes. And at the end of August, I'll be doing The Legend of Adam's Grave, which will be presented by Denver Lodge No. 5 for their Masonica event. You need to go to www.denver5.org/masonica to check it out. I'll have links to that in the show notes also. They'll have a series of different people speaking that day. It'll be an in-person event. However, I am only going to be Zoom-based. So the education this week is really about planning and expectations. And we're going to talk some history and all of these kind of things as we go along. But let's go ahead and get into it. This first piece that I want to read for you actually was written back in 2017 when Darren A. Laners was expecting to become the worshipful master of his lodge. And this one starts out, What to Expect When You're Expecting, Worshipful Masters Edition, by Midnight Freemason guest contributor Darren A. Laners. One of the first purchases for any expectant parent is the book What to Expect When You're Expecting. It is a guide to help you, as a mother or father, to understand what happens during pregnancy. Unfortunately, a newly elected worshipful master does not have a similar guide to help him prepare for his year in the East. Trust me, I've looked. Serving my lodge as worshipful master should be one of the high points of my Masonic career. Since my election as worshipful master last month, I've been full of trepidation. I've been asking myself the below questions. Why am I so nervous? What if they, my brethren, don't respect me? Should I step aside so someone more competent can do the job? I hope to answer these questions and more below. I really need to get my emotions subdued if I'm going to have a successful year in the East. Since there is no guide, I need to come up with one. Why am I so nervous? There are plenty of reasons for me to be nervous. We have a certified lodge instructor in our lodge, so I want to make sure that all the ritual is by the book. I'm going to be master of a lodge that has a good mix of newer younger masons and older veteran masons. As you might imagine, sometimes there's a difference of opinions between these sets of masons. I want to make sure there is harmony among the brethren. I've been a member of this lodge since November of 2011. I know all of the brothers, and they know me. I know the ritual. Sure, I might swap a word here or there, but I'm pretty confident with it. There is no reason I should be nervous. Yes, I'm going to make some mistakes. It's my first journey to the East, by the time I feel comfortable in the East, my time will be at an end. I just need to accept this and breathe. I need to relax and have fun. What if they don't respect me? I need to realize that there is a mutual respect between all the brethren in my lodge. Several of them have mentored me throughout my Masonic career thus far. I don't want to let them down, but ultimately I might disappoint them. They might not like the goals that I'm setting for the lodge for the coming year. It's okay if they don't. They might have different ideas, goals, and aspirations than I. Some of their ideas might be better than my own. Our differences make us stronger as a fraternity. I realize that my time in the East is just a continuation of the Masonic journey I've been on thus far. I have exchanged ideas and communicated with them just fine up till now. There should be no difference due to me being in the East. As long as I keep the lines of communication open, I'll be fine. Should I step aside so someone more competent can do the job? No. My brothers elected me. They must have the utmost confidence that I can do the job. I need to have the same confidence. I've already reached the realization that I'm not going to be perfect. I realized that I might not be able to please all of them as master, but that I should have an open dialogue with them. They have elected me because they believe that I'm ready. So if they believe in me, then I need to also believe in myself. I'm ready to serve this lodge as worshipful master. It would be more of a disservice to them if I stepped aside. So what am I missing? Oh yes, a mission statement. I need to summarize my goals that I've set out for my year as master. This will make it easier to communicate my plan to the brethren without going over each goal individually. Let's face it, we all have a short attention span. I don't think all of the brethren will want to know all of my goals, and if a few of them do, they will ask me. Therefore, I present my mission statement. I want to make St. Joseph Lodge a better place, a place for brothers and their families to spend time, and a better asset to the community, a place that men in my community want to join. I want to educate the brethren not only using traditional education, but also teach some of the esoteric meanings of the ritual as well. Lastly, I want to raise some funds by having fun. However, it still feels like I've forgotten something. Is it not taught that we as Masons should never commence any great or important undertaking without first invoking the blessing of deity? The trust of a Mason is in God. We open and close our lodges with prayer. Prayer serves an important role during the initiation of our candidates. Is it not right that I should pray to the great architect to bless my labors as the worshipful master? Of course it is. That great lesson applies here, and I should have done this to begin with. My emotions would have been minimized had I followed that lesson. I'm going to need God's help as much as my fellow brethren's help to have a successful year in the East. So it looks like I've written my own What to Expect When You're Expecting to Become Worshipful Master Guide. 5 easy steps. 1. Relax and have fun. You're not going to be perfect, but you'll be okay. 2. Communicate and be open to listening. Exchange ideas with the lodge. 3. Believe in yourself. Your brothers believe in you. 4. Have a plan. A mission statement is a good way to set out your goals in a few sentences. And 5. Most importantly, invoke the blessing of deity always before undertaking any task as worshipful master. Your journey to the East might have been different, or maybe you're still traveling East. Hopefully, you can use this guide to help you. I think it works for any step in your Masonic journey. It's too bad that it took me until I was going to be worshipful master to come up with one. I'm sure fellow contributor Greg Knott or Todd Creason will have a joke or two ready about that. Darren A. Laners. So all the way back in 2017, Darren was ready to go into the worshipful master seat, and he was having a lot of issues about this. And of course, he was a guest contributor back then. He is a co-managing editor along with me on this blog now, so he's come a long way. And I also know that he's really found his place in Freemasonry with some great work that he's done with that lodge. In regards to this first part of it, I'd like to ask our Craftsman Plus, what was your biggest fear going into the East for the first time? All right. Now, the next part of this is to read his follow-up article, What to Expect When You're Expecting, Epilogue. Let's see what he says. The very first article I wrote for the Midnight Freemasons was called What to Expect When You're Expecting, Worshipful Masters Edition. I wrote it as I was having trepidation upon going into the East in my home lodge of St. Joseph 970. I ended up setting out 5 things to follow as a guide on my way to the East. relax and have fun, communicate, believe in yourself, have a plan, and invoke the blessing of deity. Now that my year is almost at a close, it's time to reflect back on it. I'm going to address the first three items and then break out my mission statement. 1. Relax and have fun. You're not going to be perfect, but you'll be okay. I don't feel like I had time to relax or have fun during my term in the East. I had several things happen that, while not in my direct control, contributed to this feeling. We spent a lot of time and money on the repairs of our stairs. Although the process of getting them repaired began while I was in the West, we went with a recommendation and bid from a contractor recommended by our building committee chairman. Unfortunately, once the job was done, the wood that was used began to split on the sides of the stairs. When we asked him to replace it, he blamed everything on the age of our lodge. He didn't take responsibility, so the committee chair took it upon himself to fire the contractor. He then had to bring in another contractor to fix the stairs that were splitting. Needless to say, the effort took several thousands of dollars. The brother that was going to serve as junior warden informed me, shortly after being elected, that he had been accepted into a program sponsored by his church that would allow him to continue his education. Unfortunately, his classes met on our stated meeting night, so he would only be able to make a few meetings. Around the same time, my junior deacon had to go back into the workforce and ended up getting a job, which was second shift, and would also keep him from the meetings. I was essentially two officers down, which I had to replace every meeting. Luckily, my senior deacon stepped up to fill the junior warden's station in his absence. I was also able to place one of the younger members of the lodge to the position of junior deacon from junior steward. All of this, along with the items below, contributed to a stressful time in the East for me. 2. Communicate and be open to listening. Exchange ideas with your lodge. It's difficult to communicate and exchange ideas with your lodge when nobody is showing up for a stated meeting. Of course, missing two members that regularly attended lodge meant that we were scrambling for a quorum every meeting. There was actually one meeting where I had the bare minimum to open. While we were able to open every meeting, there were members that had missed meetings where we had discussed items that had to be voted on. Members would then occasionally show up for a meeting and question the items that had been voted on in previous meetings. This came to a head last meeting, where I felt the choice of our scholarship winner was questioned. To be frank, I lost my temper when it was questioned. I blew up at the brother asking about it. In the not most gentle way possible, with probably not the gentlest of words, I told him that I felt that if he had made the meetings where he had discussed and voted on this, that he could have brought up his objections then. I felt that he was criticizing the decision and took it personally, even though he was just trying to point out the original objective for the scholarship. My point is, it's hard to communicate when there's very few people to communicate to. 3. Believe in yourself. Your brothers believe in you. I worked very hard with some other members of the lodge last year when I was senior warden to receive the Grand Master's Award of Excellence. At our Grand Lodge sessions, as the Master of St. Joseph Lodge last October, we did it. Not only did we receive it, we were also awarded second place in the state for lodges under 80 members. In order to receive the award, there are a number of things that the lodge must do. These items always involve having at least 3 elected officers and a total of 5 to 7 members doing them. For whatever reason, this past year, very few members of my lodge were willing or able to make these events. It got to a point where I signed in as a member of another lodge to which I belong so that they would get the credit. While some of these events took place on dates where members couldn't go because of family commitments or work, I feel that there is little to no desire by the membership to attend any lodge activities, especially ones needed to qualify for the award. It's hard to believe in yourself and to believe that your brothers believe in you if you don't share the same commitment to the lodge. 4. Have a plan. A mission statement is a good way to set out your goals in a few sentences. In order to begin, I want to look back upon my mission statement. It was as follows. We will not read this because we just read it. So, let's see if I achieved any of what I set out to do. I will begin with, I want to make St. Joseph Lodge a better place. It's a pretty broad statement. There's 2 ways to answer it. What is a lodge, really? Is it the building or room where you hold your degree work and stated meetings? Or is it the members that gather for the degree work or stated meetings? Every Mason should know it's both. What did I do to make the lodge a better place? From the building standpoint, several improvements were instituted. The very first thing we did was improve the lodge room itself. We had our old degree trestle boards framed up to keep them from deteriorating. We installed the internet, a wireless network, and mounted a flat-screen television on the wall so that we could cast the degree slides from our phones instead of needing to have someone bring a computer and a projector into the lodge. Our stairs were in dire need of repair, so we had them fixed. We had some boiler repairs that needed to occur also. Finally, I took an old lodge computer and converted it into a Chromebook so that we could have another device to cast from if needed. The second line of my mission statement covers the lodge from the members' perspective. A place for brothers and their families to spend time and a better asset to the community. I tried very hard to make our lodge better. I tried to have two separate movie nights for the members and community. On the couple of occasions when I did this, I was able to get a total of 4 members combined at both events, including myself. We did have a moderate success at holding a trunk or treat event for the local food pantry. The idea that was communicated to our community was to have them show up and bring items for the food pantry and get candy. I had a total of 6 members, including myself, show up and help me hand out candy while we collected items for the food pantry. We collected a decent amount for a donation. We also held a chili dinner that we participated with Ogden and Homer Lodges. This event brought out a good number of brethren and their families from across the area. We had a good meal and good fellowship as well. I have one more event planned before my time in the East is at a close. We're having a dinner to recognize the veterans and first responders in the lodge prior to our stated meeting in June. As of right now, I have 1 RSVP, but the mail just went out, so I'm hoping that I get more responses. The next line of the mission statement is a big one, a place that men in my community want to join. During my year as master, we have had 3 petitions to join our lodge. We also have 1 candidate that is an entered apprentice, but is a college student and has trouble scheduling his next degrees. Of the 3 petitions, 2 are now fellow crafts and 1 is getting his EA degree this coming Thursday. I think that getting any new members is doing a decent job. I am a member of a few lodges where they're lucky to get a new petition a year. Did I really make the lodge a place the men in my community want to join? I certainly tried. I advertised on social media to have men come and meet us at a local establishment before our meetings. I tried to have community movie nights as well. We held the Trunk or Treat as a community event. I used the new materials from the Ancient Except the Scottish Rite and posted the short video, Not Just a Man, a Mason, all over social media as well. I've also discussed with the lodge using the invitation to petition in order to get new members. We're giving away our yearly scholarship and Teacher of the Year award at the high school this week, which is another chance for us to get community exposure. My hope is that maybe one man in the audience will be interested in joining us. I want to educate the brethren not only using traditional education, but also teach some of the esoteric meanings of the ritual. My biggest failure as master has been in the area of Masonic education. Quite frankly, compared to Homer, where education is the first and foremost item at every stated meeting, we have a fair amount of business to get through at St. Joseph. I absolutely tried to institute a meeting structure where education was the first item, followed by the regular meeting, but it ended up being close to a 2.5-hour affair. Many of the older membership complained about the length of the meeting. Of course, this had nothing really to do with the education, which might have added 10 minutes to the meeting. Some of the older members like to hear themselves talk and like to motion for items on the floor for votes. They also like to have me explain items that we are discussing multiple times because they are hard of hearing, even though they are usually at the front of the lodge. By the time we get to where education is on the agenda, most of the older membership will audibly groan or sigh when I mention it. It's gotten to the point where, at least at the last meeting, I told everyone that I had an education piece that I would give after the meeting if anyone was interested. Of course, the younger members of my lodge were interested. All the older guys just packed up and left. The last item on my mission statement was a personal goal. Lastly, I want to raise some funds by having fun. At St. Joseph, we have a building with retail space downstairs. We have a renter that guarantees us fixed income every month, so we really don't have to do any fundraising. The idea for my fundraiser was simply to help bring awareness that our lodge is more than a bunch of guys who dress up and wear aprons. The idea was to show us having fun in a relaxed setting. From my time, being a Cub Scout leader, the best event of every year was always the Pinewood Derby. So my idea of having an adult Pinewood Derby was one that I thought would be well received. As we began planning the event last June, the vision took twists and turns. However, I could not be more pleased to be partnering with some adult leaders from the local scouting units to have our lodge sponsor the event. The fundraiser has become an event with a real date, place, and time. The fundraiser will donate a majority of the funds to help the local scouting programs, while the Masonic Lodge will receive a small portion of the funds for sponsoring, which I plan in asking the lodge to donate to the venturing scout crew that we charter. 5. Most importantly, invoke the blessing of deity always before undertaking any task as worshipful master. I know that we open and close every meeting with prayer. I don't know that I have really taken the time to pray before writing every email to the lodge. I know I haven't done it as much as I probably should have. Maybe that's what's made the difference. I guess all I can do is hope to do it more during the next year. You see, my brethren, I am hoping to be elected as Worshipful Master of Homer Lodge for the next Masonic year, which leads me to add a new item to my guide. 6. Never give up. One of my favorite movie quotes is probably going to surprise you. It's from Batman Begins. Quote, "Why do we fall, sir?" Alfred asks Bruce Wayne in a scene, and Bruce looks at him, unable to come up with an answer. So Alfred says, "So that we can learn to pick ourselves up." Yes, I didn't accomplish everything that I wanted to do my Masonic year in St. Joseph. I made mistakes, some things were out of my control, and some things just aren't worth worrying about. I have to learn from my mistakes and refocus my efforts for the coming year at Homer. I am not going to let what happened at one lodge take away from my enthusiasm for the coming year. I have to pick myself up. Darren A. Laners. So there was his after the fact. Now, the end of my Masonic year was very much similar. There was a lot of things that, you find out as the worshipful master, and you really find out who treats Freemasonry the same way you do or puts the same amount of effort in as you do. And then you have these moments where you think, well, maybe people don't have as much drive as I do, or maybe they have extenuating circumstances that don't enable them to be as active as you are, to meet you on that same quote-unquote level of active Freemasonry. And it certainly sounds as if Darren has found those limits here at the end of his term for the Worshipful Master of St. Joseph. Now, some time later, Darren wrote a new article called What to Expect When You're Expecting the Worshipful Master's Edition, Part 2, Here I Go Again. Every time I read that title, I start thinking about the Whitesnake song, and then I just, I know Darren would totally approve. But here we go, What to Expect When You're Expecting Part 2. Let's see what he learned or what he's going to do differently. The very first article I wrote for the Midnight Freemasons blog was entitled What to Expect When You're Expecting Worshipful Masters Edition, which can be found here. I talked about my fears and aspirations as I went into the east of St. Joseph 970. I gave myself a mission statement for the year and 5 steps to follow to prepare myself for the journey. Man, I wish I could go back to being that naive. I remember writing a reply to myself and a charge to the lodge members after my year as worshipful master at St. Joseph, and you can find that here in this farewell message. I'm now going through the east a second time at St. Joseph 970. I will be installed as worshipful master virtually tomorrow morning. The Grand Lodge of Illinois is allowing that to occur with slightly modified ritual. I have also, between the time I was worshipful master at St. Joseph 970, served in the east at Homer 199. This is my third time going into the east. I must be a glutton for punishment. I now understand why past masters are so grumpy. It's not because they were born that way. It's most likely because they have served multiple times as master of various lodges they belong to. I think that a certain type of irritability sets in once you've done it more than once. You become irritable because as much as you want your goals to be true, many of us are left wanting. We are left wanting because we are, for lack of a better term, swimming against the current. You see, I've come to realize that Freemasonry means something different to every individual. While I believe that being a Freemason doesn't end at the door of the lodge room, there are many others that disagree with that idea. While I think that we shouldn't use social media to voice our political views, it's mostly because of past personal experience when I have done so, it's almost caused divisions in friendships. I see the same potential for division of us as brethren. While I believe that the education should be the cornerstone of the lodge's experience, many others are perfectly content to argue about roof repairs for an hour and a half. Some want Freemasonry to be a mystery school, others want it to be a social club. I think it can be both. I've also expressed a view that Freemasonry can only be impacted at the local lodge level. I believe this to be wholly true. I also believe that more than just you must want things to change. The brethren in your lodge must want change as well. This leaves me with a predicament at St. Joseph because except for a few brothers, I don't believe that many of the members care enough to want the change. We've lost two active members in the past year due to them moving out of the area. They are still on the member roster, however, I know that they won't be there to fill the chairs that I need filled this year. We're looking at a roof replacement that will cost somewhere between $30,000 and $40,000. We also have an issue with water coming into the basement every time we get a significant amount of rain, which needs to be addressed. I don't know when we'll be able to have our first in-person meeting and, more importantly, if I'll have enough of a quorum to hold it. I know that degree work won't be allowed immediately, so it's quite possible that I won't be able to replenish the lodge's losses. Everything that I wrote in my farewell article still exists at Lodge. My fear is that my mother lodge is dying. I jokingly stated to one of my best friends and the secretary of St. Joseph 970, Kurt Bolding, that we should just sell the building and merge with Ogden or Homer, which are a few miles down the road. He said that isn't such a bad idea. I tend to agree. I belong to Ogden and Homer, and they are having similar issues with attendance, but Ogden is at least bringing in new members. I see the writing on the wall, but I'm not going down without a fight. I am going to implement some ideas I've explored in other articles. We're already handling minutes and the bills and treasurer's report by email. If there are no objections or corrections, we approve them as read. We have been doing education at St. Joe, finally, after I had pushed for it for a long time. Blaine Pascal famously said, quote, "All of humanity's problems stem from man's inability to sit quietly in a room alone," end quote. All of St. Joseph Lodge 970's problems stem from our inability to sit together quietly in a lodge room. Yes, I'm being facetious, but my point is that we spend way too much time focusing on the building and other items and not enough time focusing on the members of the lodge. I think we often forget that a lodge isn't the building or a room that you meet in, it is the membership. So, instead of arguing about repairs, I'm going to ask the building committee to put together a report about a week prior to the meeting. If there are any questions, they can be addressed in email prior to the meeting. I plan on doing something similar for old and new business. In my mind, about 90 to 95% of our actual business can be handled prior to the meeting. We should only be reviewing, discussing, and voting on items that require a vote. If the members can be informed ahead of time and get their questions answered for the items requiring a vote, then I believe that's a win. I'm not for reinventing the wheel here. At our Illinois Grand Lodge communications every year, our Grand Lodge does the same thing. They communicate what items are up for a vote and allow the brief discussion. If it's working for them, then it can work for us. My idea is simple. Eliminate the business and just have a meeting of equal men. We can learn about each other again, or learn from each other's experiences, or learn about Freemasonry. We can go for a walk together, or go for a meal, or go biking, bowling, or do a million different other activities. We just need to do something together as brothers, do something together as a lodge. I really believe that men, not only in my lodge room, but in my community, need this male bonding. I believe this is needed now more than ever. If we can't show them that we can provide it, then why do we bother meeting? Arguing about building repairs is not Freemasonry. Freemasonry to me is the positive influence it has on the community through our charitable works, the enjoyment and investment in each other, and the improvement of ourselves. We're going to start practicing Freemasonry at St. Joseph Lodge 970. I hope you're doing the same at your lodge. If you're not, I leave you with a lyric from the song Guerrilla Radio by Rage Against the Machine. I hope the words will inspire you to start doing so. It has to start somewhere. It has to start sometime. What better place than here? What better time than now? Darren A. Laners. So he's gone the full gamut here, going from optimism to reflection and kind of aversion to the idea of doing this again to having optimism, not to give up, and then talking about his understanding of the craft and how it's changed Now, there's a lot that goes on here psychologically. My question for you is, if you've served a lodge as a worshipful master more than once, what do you feel was the most difficult part considering both years? Now, the next portion here, let's talk about the Masonic idea of planning. Now, in Freemasonry, we have this thing called the trestle board. In French, called the tableau. Not the same program you might use for data science, but the word tableau, which is a French Masonic name for a roster of members and also applied to the trestle board or the tracing board. There's also references to something similar called the Tablets of Hiram Abiff. And from Mackey's Encyclopedia, it defines this as, among the traditions of the order, there is a legend referring to the tablets used by Hiram Abiff as the trestle board on which to lay down his designs. This legend, of course, can lay no claim to authenticity, but is intended simply as a symbol inculcating the duty of every man to work in the daily labor of life after a design that will construct in his body a spiritual temple. So this is an allusion to the idea of designs, right? That's what the tableau or the trestle board is supposed to be. A place to put your designs, your plans. Now, it certainly sounds as if Darren Lehner started with a plan, gave his report on the plan, and now he has new plans and adjusted himself to things. What does Mackey say about the trestle board? It says, the trestle board is defined to be the board upon which the master inscribes the designs by which the craft are to be directed in their labors. The French and German Freemasons have confounded the trestle board with the tracing board, and Dr. Oliver, Landmarks 1, page 132, has not avoided the error. The two things are entirely different. The trestle is a framework for a table. In Scotch, trest, the trestle board, is the board placed for a convenience of drawing on that frame. It contains nothing but a few diagrams, usually geometrical figures. The tracing board is a picture formerly drawn on the floor of the lodge whence it was called the floor cloth or carpet. It contains a delineation of symbols of the degree to which it belongs. The trestle board is to be found only in the entered apprentice's degree. There is a tracing board in every degree, from the first to the highest. And lastly, the trestle board is a symbol. The tracing board is a piece of furniture or picture containing a representation of many symbols. It is probable that the trestle board, from its necessary use in operative masonry, was one of the earliest symbols introduced into the speculative system. It is not, however, mentioned in the Grand Mystery published in 1724. But Pritchard, who wrote only 6 years afterward, describes it under the corrupted name of trestle board as one of the immovable jewels of an apprentice's lodge. Brown, in 1880, following Preston, fell into the error of calling it a tracing board and gives from the Prestonian lecture what he terms, quote-unquote, a beautiful degree of comparison, in which the Bible is compared, but the Bible is not a collection of symbols, which a tracing board is, but a trestle board that contains a plan for the construction of a spiritual temple. Webb, however, when he arranged his system of lectures, took the proper view and restored the true word, trestle board. Notwithstanding these changes in the name, trestle board, tracing board, and trestle board again, the definition has continued from the earliest part of the 18th century to the present day the same. It has always been enumerated among the jewels of a lodge, although the English system says that it is immovable and the American movable, and it has always been defined as a board for the master workman to draw his designs upon. In operative masonry, the trestle board is of vast importance. It was on such an implement that the genius of the ancient masters worked out those problems of architecture that have reflected an unfading luster on their skill. The trestle board was the cradle that nursed the infancy of such mighty monuments as the cathedrals of Strasbourg and Cologne, and as they advanced in stature, the trestle board became the guardian spirit that directed their growth. Often have those old builders pondered by the midnight lamp upon their trestle board, working out its designs with consummate taste and knowledge, here springing an arch and turning an angle there, until the embryo edifice stood forth in all the wisdom, strength, and beauty of the master's art. What, then, is its true symbolism in speculative Freemasonry? To construct his earthly temple, the operative mason followed the architectural designs laid down on the trestle board, or book of plans of the architect. By these, he hewed and squared his materials. By these he raised his walls. By these he constructed his arches, and by this strength and durability, combined with grace and beauty, were bestowed upon the edifice which he was constructing. In the Masonic ritual, the speculative Freemason is reminded that, as the operative artists erect his temporal building in accordance with the rules and designs laid down on the trestle board of the master workman, so should he erect that spiritual building of which the material is a type, in obedience to the rules and designs, the precepts and commands laid down by the grand architect of the universe in those great books of nature and revelation, which constitute the spiritual trestle board of every Freemason. The trestle board is then of the nature and moral law. Like every other symbol of the order, it is universal and tolerant in its application, and while as Christian Freemasons, some cling with unfaltering integrity to the explanation which makes the scriptures of both dispensations of our trestle board, we have our Jewish and Mohammedan brethren to content themselves with books of the Old Testament or Quran. Freemasonry does not interfere with the peculiar form or development of anyone's religious faith. All that it asks is that the interpretation of the symbol shall be according to what each one supposes to be the revealed will of his Creator. But so rigidly exacting is that symbol shall be preserved and, in some rational way, interpreted that it peremptorily excludes the atheist from its communion, because believing in no supreme being, no divine architect, he must necessarily be without a spiritual trestle board on which the designs of that being may be inscribed for his direction. See floor cloth. We continue thinking about this with the entry for floor cloth. What difference is it? Let's hear what he says in Mackey's Encyclopedia. A framework of board or canvas on which the emblems of any particular degree are inscribed for the assistance of the master in giving a lecture. It is so called because formerly it was the custom to inscribe these designs on the floor of the lodge room in chalk, which were wiped out when the lodge was closed. It is the same as the carpet or tracing board. The washing out of the designs chalked upon the floor is easily seen in the early caricatures of the craft, where a mop and a pail are illustrated. These would be soon put aside when lodges met in carpeted rooms. Then the symbols were shown by marking out the lodge with tape and nails, or shaping the symbols in wood or metal to be laid about on the floor, or the table, or a pedestal, as the case might be in the lodge. Such use of separate symbols we have seen in English lodges, as at Bristol, where the ancient ceremonies are jealously and successfully preserved. An easy development would be to picture the designs on a cloth to be spread out on the floor, in use, or folded up for storage. Then there would be the further movement to the stereopticon, slides of a similar character, and which find frequent use in the United States. Brother John Harris, in 1820, designed and made a set of tracing boards for the 3 degrees. These designs were never authorized by the Grand Lodge of England. The individual lodges employed their own artists, and the results varied accordingly. Though the influence of Brother Harris tended to the uniformity that practically now prevails among the tracing board makers, articles of much interest and value on the subject are Evolution and Development of the Tracing or Lodge Board by Brother E. H. Dring, Transaction, Kotor, Coronati Lodge, 1916, Volume 29, pages 243 and 275, and Some Notes on the Tracing Board of the Lodge of Union, Number 3S, Brother O. N. Wyatt. Transcriptions come from the Kotor, Coronati Lodge, 1910, Volume 23, page 191. The latter articles refer particularly to the work of Brother Josiah Bowring, a portrait painter of London, also painted the boards of the Chichester Lodge, or Chichester Lodge, in 1811, himself being initiated in 1795. So there you see what we look at as a practical example of teaching, moving into a symbolic method of thinking and how to divest your minds and consciousness of the different things that we don't need in our lives to become better. And then, of course, the changes as these things went along in the operative way in a lodge to convey how to teach things like symbols and whatnot. But all the while, allegorically, meaning a lesson plan or a place to write those lessons down, or even how to communicate to your lodge. I've seen the trestle board as being a newsletter and a tracing board as being a thing for lessons, like pointing at the different emblems and things as we talk about them in our lectures and rituals. For my Craftsman Plus, let's get totally material here. What is the most interesting tracing board you've ever seen? Post a picture or describe it in the Craftsman Plus group, and I will go ahead and I'll post a picture of my favorite tracing board as well. I look forward to checking those out. All right, to wrap it up this week, I wanted to read a piece from Brother Adam Thayer that was published a couple of years ago, and it is about planning your year as worshipful master. Let's check out a different perspective. Planning Your Year as Worshipful Master by Midnight Freemason contributor, Worshipful Brother Adam Thayer. It has been my experience that the difference between a successful year as worshipful master and an unsuccessful one is due in large part to advanced planning. As one of my managers taught me early in life, if you fail to plan, you're planning to fail. In many states, my own included, we are preparing for installation for the ensuing Masonic year. And as such, many of us are setting their sights on putting their plan into place. I myself am moving from junior warden to senior warden in one of my lodges, and have already begun the process of planning to be worshipful master in 2017. If you're in a similar boat, here are some on-the-ground tips I've found that have helped me significantly. First and foremost, decide what you want to do in your year. What do you want it to be remembered for? Pretend you're in a lodge where you will never be worshipful master again. That's easy for me, as my lodge has not repeated a worshipful master since the late 1890s. If you only have the one chance to impact your lodge as the worshipful master, how do you want to do it? Make a list of everything that comes to mind, no matter how outlandish, because at this point of planning, there are no limits. The theme for my year is bringing Masons back to the lodge. I found that roughly 10% of our members are active, and I'd like to find ways to bring some of the 90% back. Now look at the list and add in any traditional or required events from your jurisdiction. My lodge, for instance, traditionally holds a very nice dinner in memory of our past masters. Perform a full lodge proficiency exam for the degrees early on in the year, and a more recent tradition involves the lodge attending a baseball game. I'm sure your lodge has events like this as well. Check with your secretary to see if you've forgotten some, and add all of those to the list. Next, ask some of the members who have been there a long time if there are any events that used to be very successful but have been forgotten in recent years. One that I've been told multiple times is a card tournament. Our lodge used to hold an annual cribbage tournament, with the winner receiving a nice plaque and a portion of the entry fees. Many of the older members have fond memories of the event, so I added it to the list too. If you're like me, at this point you have a few pages of events written out. Don't let that bother you yet. You're going to be removing quite a few of them. The next step I took was to contact our secretary and our treasurer to get a lot of the details. I'm a detail person. From our secretary, I got the full membership list, sorted by location. Using this, I can target those members who are close enough to attend lodge and young enough to be physically able. From the treasurer, I obtained the total income and expenditures for the past 5 years. With this, I can set a pretty clear budget, which will tell me how much I can spend without hurting the lodge. This is one of the most valuable pieces of information you can have access to, and I highly recommend you make it the largest tool in your planning arsenal. So you're finally ready to start planning. Go back to your list and start to eliminate events that are too expensive, will require more work than your lodge is able to perform, or will not have any positive impact toward your goals. To aid me in this, I worked out a budget for each event, including mailing costs, food costs, and every other foreseeable expense related to that event. This was perhaps the most difficult part for me, as I had fallen in love with some of the ideas and had a difficult time admitting that the cost to perform them was too high for the benefit we would see in return. Hopefully, you now have a list which is significantly more manageable. At this point, you should grab a calendar for the year you will be worshipful master and start seeing how your events will fit together. If you're really lucky, your lodge owns your building and you are the only tenant, so you may schedule your events whenever you choose. Our lodge shares the building with a number of other lodges, an Eastern Star, and some youth groups. Because of this, we are restricted to one night a week, Friday in our case, without requesting special permission. So, I have 52 nights available to plan events on. You may have more or less, depending on your situation. Out of the 52 nights available, 12 of those are claimed by business meetings, and one by our Grand Lodge's annual communication, bringing me to 39 nights left. our availability for events is quickly dwindling. In my lodge, and I suspect in yours as well, it is nearly impossible to hold any event after Thanksgiving, as most men are too busy with family events to come to lodge. This removes an additional 5 nights, and now I'm down to 34. Again, your calendar almost certainly will vary, but the process is very similar. My next step was to add into the calendar those unwritten rule type of events. For my lodge, this used up another 8 nights, bringing me down to only 26 nights left out of the original 52. In those 26 nights, I need to accomplish as much as I possibly can, and let's not forget that we need to leave some room for degrees and practices. So, I narrowed my list further and chose the 5 big events that I felt will most impact my goal, which again is bringing inactive members back to the lodge. You may choose more or less, but whatever you choose, you need to be fully committed to them, because you don't want to overload your lodge. It's important to spread the events out across the year. Looking at the nights you have available to your lodge, you will want to pick dates that are far enough apart that your members won't feel you're putting an undue burden on their time, but still close enough together to keep them excited about what's next. In addition, remember that your event is almost certainly going to take more than just showing up. You may have performers or lecturers to work with, caterers to line up, and mailings to send out in advance to drive excitement. Now is a great time to start planning these details with your line officers and getting their feedback on your plans. Not only will they help you see things you may have missed, but it is important to get buy-in from the people who will be supporting your vision when the rubber hits the road. One big caveat should be mentioned here. Let your officers do their jobs without micromanaging them. Trust your stewards to plan the dinners without asking them what type of napkins they're using. I promise they will surprise you at how hard they will want to work to make everything a success, but only if you treat them with respect for their office. My instructions to my stewards was simple. I have one meal that I know specifically what I would like served. Everything else is up to their imagination and our budget. Of course, all of the planning in the world doesn't mean your year will go perfectly. You will need to make adjustments as you go, all year long. Some unexpected situations will arise, and when these happen, you and your advancing line will need to deal with the situation at that time. With good planning, however, it will be much easier to deal with these situations when they occur, and it won't leave you in a bad position of constantly playing catch-up. Hopefully, this has helped you to get a handle on the planning of your year. But please don't let your education on the topic stop here. Your Grand Lodge almost certainly has reference material at your disposal, as will your secretary. Even more important, don't forget to consult with your past masters on this. Not only does it make them feel valuable, but they almost certainly can give fantastic advice based on their own experiences. Learn from the mistakes they made and capitalize on their successes. Everyone will think you're a genius for it. Now, how good are you at the ritual work? Maybe you should start practicing. Adam Thayer. Well, there you go as a practical example of some cool planning. I like the way Adam breaks this down, you know, choosing out how many nights you have available and then what's your budget? Then you can take that budget and break it into however many special nights you have, and there you've got this kind of expendable income that you can break apart. Now, if you don't have expendable income, hopefully the year before your master, the lodge fundraising that you need for the events that you want to plan are happening last year, not this year. Otherwise, everything you're making this year is going to go for the guy next year. So you need to plan in advance. My question for the Craftsman Plus out there is, what is the hardest part of planning for you? Do you have organizational issues? Do you need a manager? Do you hate reading and you need somebody to always give you the bullet points? What's your hardest part of planning for you? We're all different. You know, for me, sometimes I see a huge, you know, list of things or a big email or a giant text I have to read and, my mind is like, nope, not today, maybe tomorrow, and I'll have to go back to something and then reread it. Sometimes it helps to put it on different devices that, you know, compress the text into smaller chunks or whatever, and that works for me also, but that's just me. That's the hardest part of planning for me, is that, and probably also, and I'll put this in Craftsman Plus for you all too, but I think one of the hardest parts about planning for me is getting people who are willing to help. But that's it for this week. I want to thank all of our contributors fellows producers, legacy partners, you guys make this show happen. I want to thank everybody out there who supports us by picking up some of the products that we offer to assist in the production costs of this podcast. For all of the people who financially support this show, again, that thanks out to you. But also, check out that Facebook group. It's there for you, and we're asking the questions in there. And hopefully, that's a nice little value add and a nice community for you to express thoughts, your feelings, your apprehensions, and anything else that you'd want. Kind of a live journal. And if you're not into live journaling, we do also offer the Craftsman Plus journal and pen, which is on our website right now. I'll give you all a rundown of that next week, but for now, that's it. We'll talk to you all next week. And until then, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson. Take care.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.